From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 454, Migrating from Sand to Cloud with guest Kevin Evans. Recorded Sunday, December 13th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Kevin Evans, who is the CIO of Sun Branding Solutions, the branding division of Sun Chemical, responsible for technology and innovation as SBS transitions from a 122-year-old print firm to a leading technology partner with its clients. He could tell you're in the UK that you could be with a company that's 122 years old, because over here on the west coast of Canada, there's just nothing that old except a few trees.
Yeah, we've been around for a while. We were back in 1980. Well, 122 years ago, it was founded. 1983, SBS was the first company in Europe to install a fully digital print press.
Wow.
So, yeah, a couple of innovation firsts for us throughout our history. But yeah, 122 years is a long time.
Yeah, no, it's a legacy you have to live up to, too, being a senior leader in the organization. That's got to be challenging.
There's certainly some pressure. Yeah, every time anything goes... Well, when things go right, it's kind of good. It's worked pretty well. You know, this has maintained our heritage. And when things are a little bit more stressed from time to time, there's this kind of, you know, 122 years of history balanced upon your shoulders. So, it's quite the motivator.
The printing business is still the printing business, though?
It's changing. So when, you know, some of our staff have been with the company now for 30-odd years.
Wow.
When they started, they were literally engraving plates, and those plates would, you know, stamp up and down onto pieces of paper. Now, pretty much everything's digital. Increasingly, it's kind of four-color digital presses and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The mechanisms by which people are printing have changed. The substrates have changed. So increasingly, you know, you see flexible packaging much more than you used to. So it's a changing industry. From a technology point of view, things are getting bigger. It was not unheard of before for high resolution images to be a couple of meg. Now a couple of gig is suspiciously small.
If it's only a couple of gig, it's, you know, something's wrong with this. Check it carefully.
Yeah, quite literally. Yeah, you know, we'll get sent through stuff from a supplier or a printer, and we look at it and we think, yeah, 2-3 gig. What have they left out?
Yeah, what's missing?
Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, that would have been an enormous amount of content. So that's changing. Video increasingly used, kind of omni-channel, multi-market penetration stuff. So the physical print now is very much alongside other offerings at the same time. So yeah, it's quite the pace of change, actually, for an industry that's, you know, it's old and it's been around a long time, and the core competencies of making stuff look good on shelf haven't really changed.
No, people's expectations are higher than ever when it comes to packaging.
Yeah. You know, you walk through a store, and if things look cheap, people don't buy them.
Yeah, I totally agree. We recently went through a rebranding, relook exercise for Run As itself to a little more modern style website. I finally replaced the website we put up as a temporary placeholder in 2007. So, yeah, I get that, you know, look matters, and how you organize that information is important. Do you have an obligation to maintain copies of all these files that you create for your customers?
It's kind of an interesting question, that, really. Contractually, not really.
Right.
But mostly that's because contractually our clients didn't really understand when they signed contracts that they would need the digital copies in the future.
Right.
And kind of now we're in the future, they still expect us to have them. So there's this interesting balance between, we're expected to have something. A client, a Walmart, for example, will ring up and they expect us to dig out digital files from 7, 8, 9 years ago.
Right.
And they hang on a minute. You didn't ask us to keep them at the time. It's obviously not a very good answer. So,
yeah. And you're just leaving money on the table at that point. Like, if you have those files, they want to spend money with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that really on the packaging is, without getting too kind of heavily boring into packaging itself, when you look at the package that's on the shelf, there's a lot of effort that's gone into producing that. But really, the only final copy of the artwork, of the text that's on the package and so on, is the artwork. It will have changed multiple times through its life. So
right.
Those final files are actually fairly important.
And this is not just about aesthetic either. These are all, often products have legal requirements of what they're allowed to say and how they're allowed to say it and how big or small things need to be.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, text sizes in the UK, we've got, or in Europe, actually, where there's a food information regulations mm-hmm. have just changed around some of that. There's traceability questions. There's FDA approval for medical devices in the sure. States. And, there's a lot of regulatory oversight as well around the packaging.
Does the cloud play significantly into what Sun Branding does?
It didn't when I joined. Mm-hmm. We had, it's funny that you mentioned 2007. I think that's when we last placed a purchase order for hardware.
well, congratulations. I mean, that's 8 years, man. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Some of it's, it had been sweated. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
So we had a traditional on-premises SAN that was, you know, 25 terabytes sat in a box. There was a whole bunch of backup tapes on-site and off-site.
Sure.
Backup restores and automated tape archiving and so on.
All of the things that a responsible organization would do for their data.
Yeah, you know, none of it was bad, but no. All of it was a little bit creaky. So we looked at cloud for a couple of things. We have an online software as a service offering that we sell into our clients. We're rewriting that natively for the Azure cloud now. So that's a Azure PaaS offering. And that's brought us some software benefits. Or quite a lot of software benefits, really. But also from an internal infrastructure perspective, we had VMs running on VMware hosts internally. We've been able to move those to the cloud, which has given us some significant advantages in terms of geographic reach. We have teams in the UK, we have teams in the US, we have mm-hmm. teams in Europe, in India. So being able to host things in the cloud and replicate quickly has worked pretty well. Being able to take that fairly ancient 25 terabyte SAN and replace it with a 1.4 petabyte cloud hybrid store, has been pretty good. We've able to bring files online that previously would have been tape backups or restoring from tape backups, which gives clients the ability to just retrieve them themselves. It's pretty heavily cloud-based now. We have a couple now of VM hosts left, but everything else is up in the cloud.
So this is a hybrid store, some of it on-premise, some of it in the cloud?
Yeah, so the biggest challenge that we had with storage, because of the industry that we're in and the fact to say a couple of gig is what we would consider to be a small asset.
Sure.
I have, you know, 200 people sat in the room who are doing artwork. They expect to browse to a file, double click that file and it to open on their machine. And those files can be 2 or 3 gig each. And then in turn, they can have 10 to maybe 15, 1 to 2 gig images embedded. So you're looking at kind of 30 gig to stream to a machine across a LAN. And there's a small delay and so on. If you try and push that up into the cloud and use cloud as a primary store, you've suddenly got 200 people trying to download 20 to 30 gig each at a time.
You're going to bury a network in a big hurry.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's straight up productivity. This is these people's day-to-day work. If it takes time, you make less money from those employees. Like, there's no two ways about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a direct cost to us. Mm-hmm. If somebody 12 minutes to open an artwork versus 2 minutes to open an artwork, that's 6 less artworks that they can open in an hour.
Yep.
You know, if depending on the level of complexity of what they're doing, new builds obviously take a long time. Amends can be pretty simple text things. If it's going to take you 15 minutes to open and then 15 minutes to save a file for a 2 minute change.
Yeah.
You know, it's a ridiculous percentage. So we needed something that gave us on-premises storage. We really couldn't move away from the traditional kind of in the corner of the room, well, you know, in a room with fire suppression and everything else, but in the corner of the room and SAN approach. But we also needed the cloud recovery, the DR potential of having it up in the cloud. So that's, we went to talk to Microsoft, bought a couple of their StoreSimple 8600s. And they're on-premises SAN. There's 25 terabytes of SSD. There's another 15 terabytes of SAS disk in there.
Right.
And then there's a 500 terabyte cloud store that it tiers off to. So effectively, you've got an auto-tiering SAN, but one of those tiers is the cloud.
Right.
So effectively, what we've really got is kind of an 80 terabyte on-premises cache for a 1 petabyte cloud store. And then since then, we've extended that with another 8100, which is the smaller unit.
And I just find it interesting when you talk about cloud storage and there's a size limit because the cloud's supposed to be infinite.
Yeah, it's I would be surprised if Microsoft don't remove that limit. It's a limit that's imposed for billing and theoretical reasons rather than a practical one. And for us at the moment, the total storage that we're using is a little over a petabyte. We've got 1.4 petabytes sat there, so we've still got, you know, a fair percentage of growth, even with what we're doing. 400 terabytes takes a while to fill.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you well, you think back to 3.5-inch floppy disks, and they were quite a lot. 720K, and we all thought, you know,
yeah,
how will I ever fill this?
Let's get out the calculator and figure out how many 3.5s in a terabyte anyway.
It's a few. Yeah, it's a lot of C60 tapes in a tape-to-tape player. So it's a really interesting thing around whether that cap will go away. I suspect that Microsoft will remove it, and actually that it will become a theoretically infinite store.
Well, in reality, it's like, bill me for what I use. Don't bill me for what I might use.
Yeah, and we've, from our PaaS software offering, it works slightly differently. It's not provisioned as volumes and so on. So for that, we really do have a theoretically infinite store.
Right.
But for our own internal infrastructure, the way the store simples work is that they effectively present a single 500 terabyte volume from the disk to a machine. They download the metadata. So effectively, if one goes faulty, we just unplug it, plug in another one. There's no need to tier all the data down. It just downloads them as they're needed.
So, I mean, even if it happens to be local, it's also in the cloud. So your DR strategy is already there automatically. You've got a local store for performance. Is there an automated mechanism deciding what's local and what's remote?
Yeah, it's all deduped, compressed, and tiered based on access time and a few other clever bits of proprietary algorithm stuff that they won't tell us what it's doing. But yeah, it's all just auto tiers between the three, you know, and that's the SSD, the SAS, and the cloud. And that's not too different from where we were on a SAN perspective prior to the shift.
Sure.
It's just the fact that, say, that the cloud, we had a semi-simulated DR exercise last week. And by semi-simulated, I mean somebody accidentally unplugged something they shouldn't have done.
But that's not really a simulation.
Well, yeah, we kind of look upon it as one in hindsight. At the time, it was a little bit more fraught. But the interesting thing there is, you know, it's one point, we're literally just over the petabyte mark in terms of data. If we'd had to restore that from tape, I reckon we'd have been looking at 8 weeks just to do the restores, just for the sheer time taken to take a tape out, copy the tape over. We actually
We're getting a terabyte or so per tape these days. But if you're talking about a petabyte, that's 1,000 tapes.
Yep. And that's, you know, find me a tape loader that will take 1,000 terabyte tapes and load them at a time. It just doesn't happen. So that time to, you know, have somebody go in there, stick a tape in, take the next one out, make sure that those tapes are cycled back off site because you have a fire within that 8 week restore period and you lose your tapes as well.
Sure.
So that, you know, it would have been a long time. Optimistically, we said we maybe could get it down to 2 weeks, but it would have been a long time. It took us 12 minutes last week. We literally failed the whole thing over. We had our guys who were out in India. They were up and running on a cloud-based VM that auto-provisioned itself, presented the volumes to them, and they were carrying on. And what they saw was a 12-minute outage. They actually thought it was just a local internet drop. Didn't even realize what the problem was.
Wow. And I imagine they introduced some latency for a while now as the local caches and stuff catch up. But the bottom line is you didn't lose anything and your outage was minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And that literally is it. It was a bit of extra latency. So somebody would double back a file and think, oh, this is a bit slow.
Yeah.
It's from a, you know, with my CIO hat on in terms of confidence and comfort levels, knowing that they actually didn't realize we'd had a problem.
Yeah, you had a catastrophic failure, actually. And they're complaining about performance problems.
Simulated failover. Yeah.
I'm still not convinced that was a simulation. I think you failed over. That was real.
Yeah, pretty real simulation. But yeah. For that to be dealt with, you know, effectively, no intervention on our part, because by the time we realized what had gone on, it had already happened and failed over.
Yeah. I like those kinds of failures, although it's, I mean, hot failovers are always chilling too, right? When your machine tells you, by the way, I failed over.
Yeah.
And you're like, why?
Especially when it, you know, storage volumes are that size.
Yeah.
You just think, you know, I don't know. I think everybody out there has probably sat and watched a RAID 5 array come back up and say, you know, not quite the ticket. I'm just going to rebuild for you. And you just think,
It's
only a 5 terabyte volume and it's out for an hour while it does a rebuild.
Well, it thinks about what it really wants to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a really interesting place to have gotten to. And SANs age out, right? I mean, that's the problem I've certainly dealt with, is you're suddenly confronted with a 6-digit or 7-digit upgrade cost to a new SAN. And when you're starting to look at going to expense models for your storage, well, obviously you had a capital investment for the on-site hardware.
Well, kind of.
Kind of?
There was a kind of. Microsoft had a promotion on, so actually we did pretty well out of it. We're pretty heavy users of Azure anyway, and they, I think the promotion's still running, so IT managers out there, go talk to your partner account manager. But yeah, they were actually offering the units themselves for free as long as you made a sufficient commitment to Azure spend.
Nice.
Because that spend wasn't just storage spend, it meant that we could basically make the Azure commit, get the units themselves for free. So, you know, they're like 60,000 US each. So those turned up on our doorstep effectively unpaid for, and the money that we'd basically spent on doing those enabled us to move some of our VMs up to the cloud too, but reuse the money that we got the free units for to pay for the VM moves. So actually we kind of ended up with the storage arrays free of charge.
Interesting. But you can see how that makes sense from a Microsoft perspective too, because they're going to be collecting money from you every month effectively indefinitely, maybe the next 122 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's only going to grow. You know, we look back at some of our data growth. And if I look at January 2014, we were growing at around 500 gig a month. By December 14, we were growing at around a terabyte a month. June 2015, we're growing at around a terabyte every 2 weeks. And right now we're growing at about a terabyte every 5 days.
Wow.
So, you know, that's a pretty steep curve in terms of storage growth. It's not going to slow down.
No.
Kind of OPEX funded model of actually you pay for the storage and we'll give you a box for free.
Makes a lot of sense.
Probably going to work out pretty well for them.
Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the fighters of configuration drift. Configuration drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. ScriptRock will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. And now with the latest update, ScriptRock offers vulnerability screening on all of your nodes at no extra cost. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. What about corruption problems? Do you still have that child, you know, parent, grandparent rotation things that you can go back and get a backup that's from 3 months ago, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So we, again, something that we had a number of requirements when we went out looking, and some of that is due to the fact that the bit that keeps me awake at night around technology is not the technology. It's the squidgy bits out of the keyboard.
Sure. Yeah. The problem usually lies somewhere between the chair and the keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. And when you have, you know, 200 chairs full of art workers who basically use crayons for a living, and then you give them access to
they have optimized their kindergarten skills.
Exactly. Yeah, it's, you know, pretty much. I feel much more comfortable giving them an Etch-a-Sketch. we're always going to have problems around people either saving changes they didn't intend to or overwriting something they didn't mean to.
Yeah.
So we wanted something that would let us deal with fairly large volumes of changes, but pretty seamlessly. So we snapshot every 15 minutes. Those snapshots are retained all day. We retain the on the hour ones for the week. We retain the end of the day ones forever.
Really?
And that, yeah.
So you have a differential store of every day. Wow.
So yeah, 15 minutes intraday, hourly for the rest of the week. And then any day I can take you back to the end of the day.
So how you're talking about a terabyte every 5 days, or basically every working week you're generating a terabyte. How much of that is this differential store versus new art?
It varies week on week. And actually, to be honest, I don't really have a number to give you on
sure.
that. In terms of dedupe and compression ratio, that terabyte turns into about 400 gig
stored.
Of changes per day.
Okay.
So it's still a fairly substantial change set. How much of that is as a result of new artworks versus changed? I don't actually know, but the deduped and compressed, say 400 gig a day or thereabouts, and then that's persisted forever.
Right.
So that in and of itself is a very large and growing storage pot. And I guess coming back to what you said earlier about the theoretically unlimited potential of the cloud, actually what we have is a 1.4 petabyte single volume, if you like, persisted and presented to the devices. But then alongside that is this forever growing infinite archive and retrieval pool.
Yeah. I mean, 400 gigs a week, say 50 weeks a year. So what is that? 20 terabytes of new data a year at this. And it's obviously it's accelerating as you're getting busier.
Not just busier, actually, it's just accelerating. And that's the interesting thing for us is from a traditional kind of storage purchasing perspective, the busier you are, the more work you're doing, at least in theory, the more money you're generating.
Right.
And that spending more money is fine because it's offset with more cost. Actually, yes, we are seeing that, but the growth for us is primarily attributed not so much to growth in volume, but just growth in sizes. So where, for example, we would have once upon a time received a file that went to printer, which was 200 meg, that same file is now 2 to 3 gig.
Right.
Because we're sending very large formats and the printer will then scale down to fit.
So the expectation of the quality of the art means that naturally the art files are larger for the same job. And that increases your storage relationship. Now, I got to think, the storage costs are comparatively small, but I still think you've got to, you know, from a CIO perspective, I really want to map how much I'm storing versus what we're making for it. You know, this increase in size isn't free.
No, and it's well, actually, the interesting thing so far is that actually it's been pretty close to free. The main reason for that is that cloud storage prices are dropping at roughly the same rate by pure coincidence, roughly the same rate as our consumption is growing
right.
in percent terms.
We are racing to the basement in storage pricing. It's unbelievable how cheap it is.
Yeah. And that's, you know, from my point of view, that going back to, again, you mentioned earlier, the capital cost of going out and buying a traditional SAN.
Oh, yeah.
They don't magically get cheaper just because you've had it for a year. You know, the vendor
pretty much the opposite of that, actually.
Yeah, you know, when did EMC last ring somebody up and say, hey, you know, you spent $1 million, but actually modern market price is 400,000, so we'll give you 600,000 back.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. So the OPEX model, insofar as the prices are unlikely to make a massive upturn, that OPEX model gives us a fairly significant benefit as well.
And right.
actually what we're seeing is price holding relatively constant while consumption goes up.
Right. So your spend is being constant, even though you're consuming more at a lower price.
Correct.
That's really interesting and a very interesting dynamic to this thing as a whole. I mean, it now makes moving back to a SAN completely infeasible.
Yeah. We'd be, you know, I don't even think we could.
Yeah. Just the spend and the space, you know, I mean, hard drives are getting bigger, but they're not getting bigger at the rate you're generating data.
No. You know, the power consumption, the heat that they generate, yeah. you know, all of the associated costs around running a data center. And fundamentally, we're not specialists in...
That's not your business.
In enterprise-grade storage.
I was just doing the math of the labor of the tape rotation. You know, you had some people that was their job.
Yeah.
And now they can work on better things.
Yeah, exactly. They're all still with us. You know, we certainly haven't looked to do any of this as a reduction in headcount exercise. No. But it means I can take people who previously were tape operators,
yes.
and I can turn them into, at the risk of sounding really corny, change agents. You know, now they're able to actually go out and drive things that improve the business,
right?
Other than just doing things that keep it running.
Yeah, that needed to be going on. And this has been a conversation we've had over and over again on the show. It's this, there's no lack of work here. Everything that can be automated gets automated, and it frees you up to do stuff that's more sophisticated than that.
Yeah.
It just doesn't ever seem to go away.
It's that transformational thing. And yeah, as an organization, say we're 122 years old, we've been at the front edge of a number of technology changes throughout time, but we don't have an unlimited budget. I can't afford to go out and just hire an extra 10 people to push through a project. I have to look at using the people I've got.
Right.
And if they're tied up with taking a tape out of the drive and putting another one in, it really limits what we can do. So yeah, it's really, you know, the cloud transformation, the storage array changes, they've made really big changes from an infrastructure perspective, but they've also made some really big changes in terms of what we're able to do as a business.
And you also talked about, I mean, offices in the UK, obviously, offices in the US, offices in India. So you're also doing geolocation into all of those things as well?
Yep. So we cache into Chennai and Bangalore. We have two Indian locations mm-hmm. over there. We have some guys out in the States, and we pre-cache files out to them. Admittedly, they are on the smallest side of what we deal with because they tend to be the print ready files, so they're a couple of gig at most rather than a couple of tens of gig.
Right.
But even so, you know, it means we can have local points of presence in Texas, for example. So our users in the US can retrieve files from Texas, which are half another country. But you know, rather than trying to retrieve them from Europe, our users in Europe can retrieve stuff from Amsterdam. Our users in the UK can retrieve stuff from Dublin.
And back in the day, you know, this is one of my jobs as a consultant was setting up those distribution data centers. So we'd put a facility in the US for you and we'd be syncing data with WAN connections and so forth. And you just get that almost for free out of the cloud.
Yeah. It's pretty much a zero cost. It's not quite zero because there's a little bit of manpower involved and there's some thought up front, but it's a pretty much zero cost benefit of just having the data live near its user base.
Yeah.
you know, multiple replicas, read-only geo-redundant replicas, which we've been able to spin up so that people who are only accessing files can do it very quickly from local data centers. And it's a little bit more complicated when you've got kind of multi-master replication of people updating things in separate locations.
Yeah.
But actually, for most of our business model, the people who are located non-centrally, if you like, out in the satellite offices, tend to be the people who are viewing content, sharing it in print, sharing it with suppliers, sharing it with printers. So actually for them, kind of the read-only geo-redundant stuff has been phenomenally useful.
Yeah, actually doing the work you needed to do. So what's next for you in terms, I mean, it sounds like the storage side is handled. Is there much more to do for you?
Storage-wise, I think we're pretty much in a happy place, really. This was meant to be kind of a phase one of an organizational shift to new storage. And actually, we've got more out of it than we expected. And we've kind of ticked off phases two and three at the same time. So that's a pretty big win. The VM migration up to the cloud is kind of continuing for us. We still have some things which are on premises, mainly from a licensing perspective. It tends to be hard to persuade some of the licensing providers for some specialist apps that sticking their things up in the cloud is a good idea.
Right, right.
So we're continuing with that. But the biggest thing to say is it's probably our internal use and client provided software application that we're rewriting to take advantage of the cloud and all the auto scaling and geo redundancy and you know, multiple points of presence and so on.
Because it wasn't storage that got you into the cloud. You were already moving that way, and then this became a product that obviously grabbed on and was highly beneficial.
Yeah, exactly. We've been fairly heavily invested in Azure since the pretty early days. We're using almost all of it, actually. We use machine learning and storage services and websites and DNS and CDN and pretty much the whole shoot and match. So we were around the table with Microsoft talking about storage challenges and actually expected them to put us in touch with a partner who would try and provide us with something kind of a, you know, EMC style service. And actually they put us in touch with a partner who was a StorSimple partner, and they said, you know, we have an offering for this. So we've worked pretty closely with the guys from Microsoft and a partner called Solid Soft Reply. I should give them a little name drop.
Sure.
Who come in and yeah, really helped us deliver all of that. So yeah, the storage stuff really is kind of the if you like, the shining light in the bit we've already finished.
It seems like it was the big win, but I just love that this is not where you started out. You just found this win, and I think the math on it's got to be awesome.
Yeah, exactly. It really was an opportunity that we probably wouldn't have found if we hadn't already started to make the commitments into Azure that we'd made.
Yeah.
But having made them, this was kind of a logical next step. And as you say, it's the maths on it has turned out to be exceedingly good, especially when you take into account the fact that actually we got the boxes for free.
Yeah. You got it. You clearly did it at the right time. That was not an inexpensive piece of equipment you needed to get. Is there any reaction of your customers? Do your customers care that you're using hybrid cloud storage one way or the other?
Depends who you talk to at the customer, actually.
Right.
So if you talk to kind of the marketing people, which is our traditional user base, as in, you know, the people who own product around the world, they tend not to be too bothered either way. They just want it to be quick, and they want it to be local, and they don't really care how we deliver it other than the fact that they want it to be quick. So, they're all very pleased that things have got quicker. They're very pleased that things are closer to them. It's kind of, you know, edge caching for the 2015, 2016 generation, I think.
Sure.
But they don't really care how we're provisioning it. If I said to them, actually, you know, we've driven a lorry to the outside of your building and it's got a 4G dongle in it and, you know, it's providing the storage from the car park, I don't think they'd be bothered in the slightest.
But a great scenario. I love it.
Yeah. You know, maybe it's not such a bad idea.
For the right customer, yeah.
There's a business model in FreeMC at some point.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. Really local storage.
Yeah. The interesting people to talk to have been the IT departments.
Sure.
Kind of the CIOs, IT directors.
InfoSec guys, yeah.
Yeah, the InfoSec in particular. That's been surprisingly easy, actually. We thought we would hit resistance from our customers.
I mean, it's packaging information. I can't think it's that sensitive.
Oh, you say that, but actually some of that packaging information is very early in the process.
Oh,
so if you
I
look
see.
At healthcare, for example, we will have the packaging in development around 3 years before
medicine. It's a product. Yeah, shelf. Interesting. Okay. So you have a company secret there.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not all, we don't have the molecular formulas of the medicines, for example,
right.
But you pretty much know what it's going to be called. You know what it's going to be marketed for. You know what claims it's going to make. So if you're a counterfeiter, for example, there is value in that.
Sure.
I think the once it goes on shelf, yeah, you're absolutely right. You can walk around and take a picture of it, and you have exactly what we have.
The secret is out.
I think the interesting thing around that has been, a year ago, nearly 2 years ago, we started having this conversation with clients, and there was a lot of reticence. There was a lot of, oh, our data is going to be in the cloud. How do we control it? And so on. Actually, that conversation has really turned on its head over the last 2 years. Now we're talking to them and saying it's in the cloud, and they're saying, oh, good. That means there's an InfoSec team looking after it. So there's a network security team looking after the network.
Arguably the best in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, my argument, as I said earlier, we're not specialists in running data centers.
Yeah.
Microsoft, Amazon are, Google are.
Yeah.
We aren't.
And nor should you be. I mean, it's not like it's a failure on your part not to grow these people. Why would you do that? You're in the printing business.
Yeah. So that's been an interesting realization from them.
Yeah. It's now seen as an asset, as a strength to your business, that you're allowing the best to take care of that data.
And they've done their own investigations. They've talked to the security teams. Microsoft in particular is very good at kind of their trust center stuff and disclosure of 7018 mechanisms and 27001 mechanisms and how they ensure encryption and so on. Brad Smith is, you know, fairly famously fighting the good fight for people.
Absolutely. They right now, there's a case going on to sort of, you know, that around sovereignty of data, which I think is a big deal. And they are right at the front of that.
So I think that's engendered a lot of trust that we've kind of benefited from.
Nice.
I think the big bit, I think, is that we've kind of reached that tipping point in terms of acceptability where people have realized that actually, if it does generate a downside, and it is an if, that actually that's outweighed by there is a network security team. There is a storage expert team.
Yes.
Microsoft have a support contract with Seagate, which I will, you know, I've never seen Microsoft contract with Seagate, but I'll guarantee you it's better than mine.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't want to be on the other end of that negotiation either.
No, yeah, it's that those guys have muscle to bring to bear in terms of getting support and provision and fixes and on-sites, you know.
When you buy exabytes of storage, you get a better phone number.
Yeah, exactly. And I would be surprised if they're only buying exabytes at this point.
Actually. Yeah. What's after that? Yottabytes? Yottabytes.
Yotta or Zeta?
One of those. I think it's Yotta, then Zeta.
One of the end of the alphabet. that's really been an interesting transition. We had to fight very hard in the early days to get acceptance for the fact that this was a good thing.
And the early days being 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Interesting. I feel the same thing you feel. There's a switch that's been thrown.
It's cloud is suddenly acceptable.
Yeah.
It's acceptable at board level now, where it wasn't before.
Interesting.
You know, IT directors and CIOs and CEOs and CTOs and CMOs and FOs in particular would put their photos up on Facebook or Flickr
and not even blink at it.
Not bat an eyelid.
Yeah.
But when you say to them, actually, I want to put your corporate data up, they're all like, ooh. And then you say to them, so you're fine with putting pictures of your kids up on the internet, but not your packaging? And they kind of look at you funny and go,
Good. Yeah. Well, I think Microsoft's done a lot of the homework to show they're a better storage. They have done their due diligence. It's made it better.
Yeah. There's tons of supporting documentation.
I mean, absolutely.
That's been the biggest thing is, you know, techies like asking awkward questions. And I say that as one.
Yeah.
A techie, not an awkward question. We like asking difficult questions, but I think actually a lot of the time we ask the difficult questions to see if people have an answer rather than necessarily to weigh up the answer itself.
Yeah.
And in particular, when you say, show me your 27,000 or ISO 27001 compliant physical access policy, you know, if somebody can present you with a 5-page document that says this describes just physical access, you kind of, yeah, do you know what? That's fine.
That's enough. I'm with you that, you know, most of the time we just want to know that you've thought about this. Give me evidence that you've thought about this.
Yeah. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's going to have all the answers.
No.
But actually, if you've invested enough time to come up with pre-written, pre-documented answers in concert with your supply chain and everything else for all of these things, then actually we're pretty comfortable.
I appreciate that a lot. Kevin, really a pleasure to talk to you. This sounds like a great story and yet another view of the cloud for an organization.
Thank you. It's been really good.
Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.